Hi, Estasi.
Are we starting?
We're starting.
Dude, you see me eating a bagel.
Well, I assumed you could power through that.
Shit, hi.
I'm Hallie George.
And I'm Estasi Serretta.
And this is Cults of Our Lives. Mm-hmm. And I think today we're going to be talking about one of my favorite cults aesthetically, that 1960s Southern California aesthetic.
SoCal,
as the locals say. Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Which neither of us are.
We're from Boston.
Yep.
We're obviously talking about the Manson family.
Mm-hmm. Manson family.
And all the chaos they brought. Mm-hmm. Before we start, though, I would like to give a shout out to John B., who said such nice things to us.
John, thank you.
You should all be like him, like all the other lovely Johns throughout history, like Kennedy and Oliver. Our John wipes the floor with all of them. Mm-hmm. I bet you don't cheat on your wife like John Kennedy did. That is a fact. That's not just hearsay. And it segues
us. We don't know this person at all, though.
I don't know.
We don't know their demographic.
He's from Georgia, which I love.
Solid.
And yeah, so thanks for being with us, John.
From Georgia.
John from Georgia.
We appreciate your feedback.
So, of course, to talk about the Manson family, we have to talk about Charles Manson.
That guy. Oh, Lord in heaven. He is a character.
He is crazy.
He is. He's interesting. He reminds me of, like, some of the cults we've talked about where we're like, oh, these people were evil. Oh, we're not really sure about these people, whether their intentions were good or bad. He was just straight up bad news from day one. He's such a manipulative person.
He really is. He's honestly one of those people. I know everyone throws around the word psychopath too much now. I personally blame Sherlock. He was definitely a psychopath.
He's still alive.
He is. We can talk about that later because I have a lot of thoughts on the fact that he's still alive.
Okay, sounds good.
But in the first 32 years of Charles Manson's life, he spent more than half of that time in and out of prison for sexual assault, for robbery, for grand theft auto, for pimping out underage prostitutes.
Excellent.
Always a great thing to have. Guy had a rap sheet a mile long. He got out of prison for like the fifth time or whatever in 1967. Mm-hmm. And he moved to San Francisco, which is just proving my point about cult leaders in San Fran. Again, it's also why Apple is really just a big cult.
I believe that.
Look at us with our Apple computers right here. All hail to Jobs. So Manson learned to play guitar while he was in prison, which is strange to me because I didn't think prisoners had access to guitars.
Dude, you know that I go to jail and, like, do things with prisoners. That's and by true. Things, I mean, like, music.
You need to clear that up for everybody.
Music and art projects.
Dude, your parents listen to this.
Yeah. Well, it's kids 14 to 20, but it's a maximum security.
I know. So, yeah, these kids are also like, in a bad place.
They're, like, violent felonies.
See, I was just thinking with people in prison like Charles Manson who had a history of violence, they wouldn't want to give him anything he could use as a weapon. And I feel like a guitar has all those strings. It's pretty heavy. It's just...
I don't think they're really thinking that much into it.
It was the late 60s. Everybody was on LSD.
Especially the Manson family.
Especially the Manson. So he did learn how to play guitar in prison, and he decided that he was going to be a big rock star. And he panhandled while living with a woman named Mary Brunner. And she was 23, and he moved in with her to be a leech, and eventually convinced her to allow 18 other women to live with them, too.
That's weird. So I was reading how he, like, what's her name?
Mary Brunner.
Mary was not into, like, him being like, hey, let's have all these biddies in here. But he, and then it said he, like, overpowered her rejection of that and was like, let's do it. And, like, you, like, just the way it was phrased, it was like, clearly, like, this guy has a plan. And he's not going to let one hoe stand.
One hoe named Mary.
Come on, Mary.
18 people, though. How do you even fit people like that into one apartment?
How do you find 18 people who are like, yeah, I'm into this?
Yeah. So, as a background, in the 1960s and 1970s, as anyone who's ever seen Mad Men knows, it was the peak of the hippie counterculture movement in America. And every summer was the Summer of Love, and people were really into, like, not even new religions, just, like, new spirituality and stuff. A little background on Hallie's family. My mother was born to a 17-year-old in San Francisco in 1969, and her earliest memory is being sent down to the drugstore to buy cigarettes when she was 4 years old. And they just sold them to a 4-year-old. Like, this is the kind of chaos they were working this. But so, Manson established himself in this as a guru in this world because everybody was looking for, like, a new way of thinking.
Yeah.
It was very easy at that time to sort of jump in with that.
Mm-hmm.
And he preached the idea around San Francisco and to these dozens of women who eventually came to live with him that Satan and Christ would join forces and come down to judge everybody together. Like, a really terrible Marvel movie is what that sounds like.
Is that Helter Skelter?
Yes.
Helter Skelter is Charles Manson's prediction of a race war that will be upon us.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yep. So, those black people he was so fond of. He was not. I think he was a horrible, terrible racist.
I'm sure. Which
in addition to being a monster and actually the devil.
Well, that's what's very interesting to me, too, is a lot of hypocritical people like Charles Manson were like, oh, you know, we
peace,
all...
Peace, love, and happiness, except but for the not black for people. Black people.
It's like Thomas Jefferson's everyone's equal if you're a white man.
Yes, exactly.
He started to gather a lot of support.
And by support, we mean white women. Young, white, hippie women. Like, us.
It was mostly women, and I think he sort of did that. We talked about this, I think, with the Symbionese Liberation Army, but he was very into, like, using the whole... love your body, sex positive thing to just get a bunch of women to sleep with him.
Didn't they ring up a $21,000 bill for gonorrhea?
I didn't read that, but I believe it.
Every single person in the family had gonorrhea.
Yeah, he called it his family, all of his followers. It was mostly women, but there were a few odd men in there.
Mm-hmm. Like the FLDS.
Just like the FLDS. We need to do more cults that women lead.
Hmm. Are there any?
Well, we talked a little bit about the restoration for the Ten Commandments and Bonnie Nettles with Heaven's Gate and stuff. Those had women, but I feel like we need, like, a serious feminism.
Heavy hitter.
Feminism cult. We'll find a heavy hitter with women. Just you wait. So Charles Manson, in the 60s, wandering around California, trying to make it big as a guitar player, and he was very into telling his cult how great he was. He was the best guitar player, and he was meeting with all these studio executives, and he was just sound familiar rhetoric.
Can I read this paragraph on the Wikipedia about basically what Helter Skelter is?
Yes.
Or what he was, like, saying would happen?
Yes.
Okay. Black men, thus deprived of the white women whom the political changes of the 1960s had made sexually available to them. This is after Manson and his family collect all the white hippie ladies into their group. They would be without an outlet for their frustrations and would lash out in violent crimes against whites. A resultant murderous rampage against blacks by frightened whites would then be exploited by militant blacks to provoke an internecine war. I don't know what that means.
I don't think that's a real word.
Let's just go with it. Internecine war of near extermination between racist and non-racist whites over blacks' treatment. So that's what he's, like, feeding his group.
This just makes me sad, because you hear the same kind of rhetoric today by the people who are, like, against Black Lives Matter. It's like, oh, they're gonna kill us all, but he was a huge racist, and he was just trying to play into the xenophobic fears that were very popular then, that, like, black men were, like, hypersexual and super violent and were just gonna snatch up the white women like animals or something. It was very weird and racist.
It's weird because he's, like, such a hippie.
People use a lot of cognitive dissonance when they're in cults, I've noticed.
That is definitely because, a recurring theme.
Yeah. So, like I was saying, Manson sort of styled himself as this great guitar player who was just on the verge of superstardom. And he was not. He met with Terry Melcher, who was a record producer at the time, because they still had records. And he was talking to him about a recording contract. He was always contacting this guy. Melcher sort of snubbed Manson.
Mm.
And he's like...
He was like, this is not good.
You are not a good singer. Leave me alone. But Manson had been over to his house a lot, which leads me into our notable craziness section.
Boy, does it ever.
Which are the Tate and LaBianca murders. Charles Manson, after being snubbed by Melcher, went into a rage and demanded some of his followers go to the house that Terry Melcher had lived in. On August 8th, 1969, he sent Tex Watson, Susan Atkins, Linda Casabian, and Patricia Krenwinkel and broke into Roman Polanski's house.
Roman Polanski was renting.
That was the thing, is he thought it was Melcher's house,
mm-hmm.
but Melcher no longer lived there. Yeah. Roman Polanski, also a piece of shit.
Yeah, he's not a great guy.
I don't think they knew it at the time, but he's currently...
It was about 10 years later that he fucked that kid.
He raped a child, yeah. Anyway, at this time, he was married to a fashion model and movie actress named Sharon Tate.
8 months pregnant.
Poor gorgeous. Woman. 8.5 months pregnant, yeah. She was just Hollywood it girl. And her friend and former lover, Jay Sennberg, who is a...
Sebring.
Yeah, no, you're right. I read it wrong. I don't have my glasses on. He was a noted hairstylist.
Yes, he was a celebrity hairstylist.
I have just never heard of someone being a noted hairstylist.
I never saw him say noted, but I did say... See it say, like, he was a celebrity hairstylist.
So, yeah, I guess he was, like, the Tim Gunn of his time or whatever.
Tim Gunn has nothing to do with hair.
He does fashion. I don't know any famous hairstylists. That's the point.
You do. You're going to her wedding in a couple weeks.
Our friend Macy is getting married, and she is a hairstylist, but she's not, like, to the stars. Not yet.
Not yet.
Anyway.
Hey, Maisie.
Shout out to Maisie if you ever listen to this. I try to keep us on topic because I know how much you hate when people go on tangents on podcasts.
Yeah, she's like, why are they talking?
That's what they do. So, August 8th, four members of the family show up to where Sharon Tate is sleeping. Jay Sebring is in the house.
There's a screenwriter and I think his girlfriend.
His girlfriend's name was Abigail Folger, who is the heiress to the Folger coffee fortune, yes. Which we still drink today.
Yes.
Her screenwriter boyfriend, I'm having such trouble with this name. His name is Wojciech Frajowski. I apologize. Polanski himself was in London on a film. Tate had returned home early, which is why she was staying with all their friends in this house. You can find the house, actually. The address is 150 Celio Drive, Los Angeles.
It's actually been torn down and replaced with a new house, which has been given a different address. I think it's still in the same area, but
good.
Well,
yeah, no one would want to live there after this.
In the Tate murder house?
I mean, I'm sure some people would, but those people are freaks. So they show up in the middle of the night, and they park.
Do you know when it was? It was the night after my mom's 8th birthday.
It's 3 weeks before my mom was born.
So it was like, my mom just gone to bed, like, lovely 8th birthday, and while she was, like, in her little bed in New Jersey, cuddled up in her little blanket, like, oh, what a lovely day to turn 8 years old. Shit was going down in Cali.
The family parked at the bottom of the hill, climbed over the fence, and dropped to the grounds. They climbed a bushy embankment. I'm sorry.
Yes. They thought the fence was, like, electrocuted or
which,
something.
Which, again, it probably should have been, but
I don't think
people were very chill.
Yeah.
And again, not only was it the 60s, but it was, like, California, where it's always been more chill than the rest of the country.
Very true.
And people are just kind of like, oh, whatever. I don't care if someone I vaguely know is staying at my house for a few days. Hakuna Matata. An 18-year-old student who's younger than us named Stephen Parent was visiting the property's caretaker, and he was on the property when he ran into the family. Tex Watson took out a gun and shot him 4 times in the chest and slashed his hands and killed him.
Yeah.
So this was the first person they saw, immediately killed
him. Just a kid.
And they're trying to take revenge on Melcher and...
For not letting Manson record.
Yeah, for not signing him. And they had been told to destroy everyone as gruesome as you can. So they were just on a rampage.
And the women were told, follow what this guy says.
Watson, Tex Watson, right? Yeah. Again, a lot of the sexism women, and racism in this cult.
It was a very, very sexist cult. I don't know. I just think, when I think, like, 1960s and hippies, I think, like, sexual revolution and, like, more equality and less racism and less sexism, and
it's
Manson's really not following that path that I would so like him to follow.
Yeah, well, if he had, we wouldn't be talking about him right now.
True.
They break into the house. They kicked Frajowski in the head. And Frajowski asked what they were doing, and Watson said, I'm the devil, and I'm here to do the devil's business.
And so they collected all the people from the house and forced them into the living room and started tying them up. And everyone was like, hey, be nice to Sharon Tate, because she's fucking pregnant. And they're like, fuck you. That's not our MO. So, basically, not to rehash all the horrible things that happen, but everyone gets killed horribly and gruesomely and violently.
With guns and knives. And then they flee.
And then they write pig on the front door.
Mm-hmm.
They write it in blood. And
So 5 people died, including Sharon Tate, right?
And, yeah.
and poor Steven, who was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I mean, they all were, but he was just some random kid. And a lot of these people didn't even know Melcher. They were just living in this house.
Yeah, it was literally just living in this house.
The whole situation was wrong place, the wrong time.
Yeah. Oh, horrifying.
Which then leads us into the La Bianca murders, which happened the next night of August 9th.
Yes.
Manson was very displeased with the panic that had happened the night before with the Tate murders. You know, all the screaming and all the blood. And obviously at this point, people had noticed there had been a murder and it became this huge sensation on the news.
When in history was there anything like that?
Especially never. Especially to a famous actress. And everyone thinks if you're up in this fancy house in like the hills, you're safe. And it was just, so it was chaos. And people were terrified because they didn't know who had done this. They didn't know where they were going to be next.
Did they not know?
No, not at first. Not that first night. Yeah.
It wasn't that obvious.
Well, because no one knew who Manson was. Well, his whole thing was that he was not as famous as he wanted to be.
Well, he's pretty fucking famous now.
He's pretty fucking famous now. And so Manson sort of instructed the people, and he came with the people to go kill people the night after the Tate murders to show them how to do it.
Yeah, he was like not having weakness. You're only as strong as your weakest link, is what he was saying.
Which is good managerial style.
Yeah, so he drove them to the house of supermarket executive Lino LaBianca and his wife Rosemary.
And it was in the Los Feliz section of Los Angeles. And they only knew where it was because they had attended a party next door the previous year.
Next door. So I wonder, the previous year, were they like, hey, that house.
I'm sure they've been planning this forever. But I know the whole reason they started these murders is they wanted it to kickstart the race war.
Yes, they did want to. They wanted to bring upon the world Helter Skelter.
Which we talked about.
Because, okay, so I didn't say this earlier, but their thing was, in the end, after black people have killed, after the militant black men have killed off all the whites, they will emerge from underground, the Manson family, as, like, the only whites left. And then they'll, like, subdue the black people because they'll be satisfied that they've, like, overturned the world.
Oh, dear God.
And, like, just, like, what the fuck are they? What? He's crazy.
When they got to this house, they took this couple. They didn't shoot them or stab them because Watson had complained to Manson about how inadequate the previous night's weapons had been. So they stabbed Lino LaBianca with a chrome-plated bayonet.
Yeah, Rosemary.
They did the same to Rosemary. Lino had been stabbed a total of 12 times. And Rosemary had 41 stab wounds when they found her body, although they think a lot of them were post-mortem. So they didn't just kill her, they just mutilated her. So Krenwinkel wrote in blood all over this house, Rise and Death to Pigs and Helter Skelter, which she spelled wrong, which, like, same. And it was all in the LaBianca's blood. Then they washed the bayonet and they left. After this, the notable craziness continues, and that obviously...
There's fucking no end to the notable craziness when it comes to the Manson family.
That's all they are.
That all they are is one long notable craziness.
And murders and...
Horribleness.
So, the Tate murders, the police originally thought that they were part of a drug deal gone wrong.
Jesus, how fucking wrong could it have gone?
So, they were working on these autopsies, and they were so convinced about this, because it's like, oh, you know, big Hollywood stars, they're all on drugs, blah, blah, blah. They ignored that the next day they found the LaBianca's bodies that had these, like, the similarities, like, all the writing and blood and stuff. So, they didn't really connect those at first.
I mean, two horrifying, violent murders in the same area.
Yeah, the police were fucking stupid.
Back then?
Well, I guess maybe they weren't as desensitized to violence as we are now.
What do you mean?
And just that they couldn't even imagine a possibility of, like, a group of people doing this night after night.
Yeah, but I mean, would we imagine that now?
I don't know. Well, because we have this stuff to think of. We have, you know, the Pulse shootings and the Sandy Hook shootings and the Paris bombings and the Boston bombings. And I just feel like we've been exposed more to just the horrificness of man.
That's true.
William Garrison lived in the guest house of the Tate property. He was their sort of caretaker, and Stephen Parent, the 18-year-old, had been visiting him the night before. And he survived Garrison, and...
Is he the only one who survived?
Yes, well, because I don't think they knew he was there.
Well, I mean, thank God.
Yeah, and he was briefly held as a suspect, and he told them that...
What a nightmare.
Yeah, honestly, and because it makes sense, like, you're the only person left in this house. Yeah. And he said he hadn't heard or seen anything on the murder night, and they did a polygraph, and they decided he was innocent, and they let him go. He did later, decades, though, say he had witnessed some of the murders, but he had hidden, which, you know...
I mean...
Understandable.
Yeah, but I don't see why you wouldn't be like, it was a group of people. Like, what did he, was
I think
he no help to the police at all?
He just said he didn't see or hear anything. You know, that's actually not very uncommon, because if you, the person or the people haven't been caught yet, witnesses are scared of retaliation.
Oh, fair.
So they don't want to say something, and then they're like, hey, you tried to, and then you're next.
Oh my God, I would lose my shit if I was that guy.
So they eventually said there wasn't really any connection between the Tates and the LaBiancas, because, you know, these people didn't know each other. They had no connection whatsoever. They didn't arrest Manson and 25 others until August 16th, which was over a week later.
Yeah.
And it was because, wait for it, they were suspects in a major auto theft ring.
Fucking
it's like how Al Capone got taken down for, like, tax evasion, finally, when he had killed all those people. And so they were searching to try to find a connection between these, and they had the Manson family arrested for Grand Theft Auto. About a month after the murders, they ended up speaking to members of a motorcycle gang that Manson had tried to enlist as bodyguards while they were committing these murders.
Charles Manson needs to get his head out of his fucking ass.
There were a lot of things Charles Manson should have done and didn't.
He thought he was Jesus. Well, I don't know. He didn't think he was Jesus Christ, but he told people he was.
He was. Well, who knows when he thought what? Like, how much of it was delusional? How much of it was just manipulative?
It's all manipulative. I can almost guarantee you.
I'm with you. We'll never know truly everything that went on in his head.
Although, I do remember reading several years ago when it was like, Charles Manson was up for parole, and
everyone's
like, in his late 70s, like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And then he was denied parole because he was like, yeah, I'm a dangerous man.
Yeah, well, like, at least he knows
we
it.
We know.
That's why you are never getting out
You're
of here.
Die in prison, my friend.
So, they get contacted by this motorcycle gang, and while they're giving information that suggested a link between Manson and both murders, a girl who lived in a dorm with Susan Atkins, who was one of the family members, because again, a lot of these people were our age. They were like late teens, early 20s, college girls.
Yeah.
She informed them of Susan Atkins' involvement with the family and the crimes they had committed.
Wait, but was Susan Atkins living with her? Like,
I believe so, or she still knew of her, so I think they were still in contact, and she did that thing all stupid criminals do where they start bragging about their crimes.
Oh my God, dumb asses. I'm not gonna say don't do it, because that's how people get caught, and you deserve to get caught.
Finally, on December 1st, 1969, so months after the fact, from all these sources, the LAPD issued warrants for Manson and all of his people. His family, they were arrested. And the trial began on June 15th, 1970, which was 2 days before my dad was born. And I think they were all arrested for life.
Were they? I feel like some of them got paroled, but no, actually, I don't think they did. Because
I know some of them have been up
for
parole,
but a lot of them died in prison.
This leads us into, where are they now?
Well, I know the Manson women are like the longest serving
women,
female inmates.
Charles Manson himself is 81.
Yeah.
He is still in prison, which, as I said at the beginning, is bizarre
to
me.
He's not going
to
get out.
Just,
wait, why is that bizarre?
No, just that we're on the same planet with such a monster, in that he has become this figure that's almost mythic.
Yeah.
As cult leaders and just our culture goes. So the idea that there's just, like, he's just a person sitting in prison right now as we speak is just very bizarre to me.
Yeah, that is kind of bizarre. He's doing something while we're talking about him.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's very weird.
I didn't think of it like that.
Hey, Chuck.
No, don't say hi to him. He's gross.
I call him Chuck. No one likes being called Chuck.
Yeah, that is a gross thing.
He was sentenced to death, but it is now life imprisonment because California abolished the death penalty in the 1970s.
Did they?
They did. They're very chilled, except for when they kept going back and forth on gay marriage.
Can I tell you, my whole life I've believed California had the death penalty.
Well, now it did,
like,
till the 1970s.
Like, my entire life. I thought it was one of the few states that had it.
I think Missouri is one of the few states that still has
Texas
it.
Texas has it.
Oh, yeah, anywhere below the Mason-Dixon line. But yeah, California is death-free, so he and all of his chicks are...
are rotting in prison where they belong. Although, okay, let's talk about the chicks. What are you thinking about these chicks?
Well, I know one of them... called herself Squeaky Fromm. Which is a terrible criminal name.
She tried to shoot Ronald Reagan. Am I incorrect?
No, you're right.
I am. Okay. Yes, in the 70s as like an act of devotion for Chucky Manson.
Chucky Cheese.
Chucky takes all of the power out of it.
So let's get everyone else to college.
His fucking disgusting 81-year-old mugshot with his fucking swastika.
He's got a swastika tattoo on his forehead.
His eyes freak me out.
He's still
dark brown, and they look the same as they did when he was young.
What?
As eyes often do,
but... I was like, people's eyes tend to stay the same color. What interests me about him and his chicks and Tex and everyone is that they have huge cult followings even in prison.
Like, do they really?
There are people who... I mean, we enjoy true crime. But yes. There are people who take it a little too far and who are obsessed with these people and send them letters.
Yeah, I wouldn't send him a letter, but just because that would make me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, and they send, like, just weird shit to them.
I am also in a prison pen pal program, but, like, I'm not corresponding with fucking Chuck Manson, you know?
I'd hope not.
I feel like I would have brought that up in our friendship at some point. That's the case.
Yeah, I feel like I would have known about that.
Yeah.
We would have read some of the letters to you guys.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, in 2008, Susan Atkins started to die of brain cancer. They set up an application for compassionate release, which is...
she didn't deserve.
She did not deserve, and she did not get. She died in prison on September 24th, 2009, in the Central California Women's Facility. And, you know, there were a lot of crazy people all around the world who mourned her.
Why?
And
she's... done nothing but bring pain and misery to
people. I think people are just interested. Like, people don't really think of it as a real thing that happened anymore.
They're, like, so disconnected from it.
Yeah, it's like a femme fatale thing. It's like those Raymond Chandler books that were just, like, hard-boiled detective kind of thing. Like, I love just the aesthetic, and I think people really romanticize it. Yeah.
You're so right. You're a smart little English major, you.
I'm not an English major.
You're sort of an English major.
I'm an integrated marketing and communications major.
Ew.
I know, it's terrible. I hate it. So because of this, and because the media will not let them go, because everybody is just fascinated by this.
I don't know. You never hear about them.
On the 40th anniversary of the Tate LaBianca murders in 2009, the Los Angeles Magazine published an oral history. The History Channel broadcast a docudrama.
Oh,
they interviewed all these women. They interviewed Manson. Just people, this is what these people wanted. What they always wanted was, like, celebrity.
And they got it.
And they did.
So I guess we should just never talk about them again so we don't give them any more celebrity.
There was a man named Juan Flynn. He was associated with Manson and the family back in the 60s. Not murder-wise, he just knew them from, like, parties and stuff. And he said, Charles Manson got away with everything. People will say he's in jail, but Charlie is exactly where he wants to be.
That's so accurate.
It is, just what we're saying. And so the point is...
yeah, that man, he had a fucking plan.
He always did, and it still
Manson
worked.
The Manson with a plan-son, if you will.
Go to your room.
That is so far from here.
That was our talk about the Mansons and their notable craziness.
And their Manson family.
And there still hasn't been a race war, so thank God for that. There might be on November 8th, but we'll see.
Oh my God.
Rate, comment, subscribe, and...
vote.
Vote and send us emails. Tell us about your voting experience.
So we can talk about you the way we spoke of John from Georgia.
Yes, John from Georgia.
John,
our boo.
Have a beautiful, beautiful...
come on, buddy, you earned it. Everyone
John,
else...
John, I hope you voted.
I hope you voted, John. Look at us, John. Don't lie to us.
John, we know you. You can't hide this from us.
Email us at cultsofourlives@gmail.com, and we will see you next week. Bye, Stassi.
Farewell.